Hello and welcome to Stuff You Should Know About Oil and Gas Production. On this episode, we're going to dive into some customer questions about K-Factor and what that means for your flow monitors. We're going to look at master kits and what these consolidated repair kits that Kimray has come out with mean for you and your operation. We're going to ask, can I mount a ValveCon electric actuator horizontally if my piping dictates that? Is there a problem with doing that? We're going to talk about how much supply pressure you need when you're using an air compressor to supply your valves or regulators. And finally, we're going to talk about choked flow. What does that mean for gas applications and liquid applications? Is that a bad thing? Enjoy. My name is Curtis. I'm here today with two men I'm pretty sure I've never seen in the same room at the same time.
Have you like guys, on a podcast or ever?
No, like ever. Have you guys ever been in the same room before?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know if there was, if you tried to avoid each other.
Oh, no.
Or if there was some kind of hidden, like,
fun. There's no beef.
You said no beef. He was, Will was like.
No, I picked up on it. Yeah.
So their names are Jordan Moore and Will Swetnam. So welcome, guys.
Thanks.
Round of applause.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Will, we talked weekends yesterday. You said you redid your garage. Do you want to elaborate on that at all?
Yeah. So I insulated the ceiling up in the attic. I insulated the walls. I added some outlets. I painted the walls, added new lighting.
You really went for it.
Just finished the cabinets yesterday. It's going to be cool, man.
Every wheel
you should come over. I mean, you're like two blocks from my house.
Jordan, what'd you do?
Not a whole lot. I got sick. Oh. Yeah, I got sick. I did, however, and I was telling you all before this, ran over a loaded 9mm magazine in my lawn and had to return that to Oklahoma City Police Department.
So you ran over it with your lawnmower.
And
walked behind it.
Yeah.
Didn't step on it.
No.
But noticed it.
I noticed it, stopped.
Called the authorities.
Did you pick it up?
Called the authorities.
Put your fingerprints on it?
No. No.
Did you really?
No, I did not pick it up.
Did that thought go through your head?
Yes.
Yeah.
I've seen too much daytime television, crime TVs
or
something.
I would have totally picked it up and been framed. So if you're missing your 9mm magazine.
Oklahoma City Police Department.
It's at the police department.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sure they'd love to talk to you.
Do you guys want to know what I did? I drove to Kansas, Wichita specifically, and watched some 11-year-old baseball.
Oh, that's cool.
11-year-old baseball tournament. Yeah. I thought I had a story on that, but that's it. This is our customer questions episode that we do on the regular. And I think we got some bangers today, right? We got some good questions. So, Jordan, you answer. You're a product technician. Product applications technician.
There you go.
Will, you're an account manager.
Yes.
You guys are both dealing with customers every day and answering questions. So that's where these questions have come from. You guys have put together. So common customer questions. First one we're going to answer, that Jordan's going to answer, is there's a thing called K-Factor that has to do with flow monitors. So the question that you have gotten is, how can I determine what K-Factor I need to program into my turbine meter and monitor setup?
Yeah. So we resell some turbine meters, and they will come from the factory with the K-Factor, which is specific to the meter, zip-tied to the neck of the meter. Now, it's really common for those things to go missing, the zip tie that the K-Factor is written on. So at that point, I guess the first way is check the neck of the meter. There should be a K-Factor zip tied to it if it's a Badger meter, which is what we resell. If the K-Factor is not there, if it's not zip tied to the neck, they can reach out to us in applications, and then we can go through the manufacturing plant to reference the serial number and get a hold of that specific K-Factor and give it to the customer.
Why does it have to be that specific model?
Oh, that's a great question. They calibrate these turbine meters in the factory. So they'll like run water through it, count the pulses, and then they have some sort of formula that they determine a K-Factor from there. So it is specific to each meter.
Wow.
And it'll go out like three decimal places. So it's a very specific number. If you're off a little bit, you can generalize by the bore size. There's charts in the manuals and stuff that you can use to do that, but it's always best to get that specific K factor so that your flow count is accurate.
That's good. Is it really called the neck?
I just called it the neck. I don't know if that's the technical term.
I like that term. Our next question, Jordan, is around master kits. So we've released, consolidated some of our repair kits. So you want to talk through that question?
Sure. Yeah. We had so recently we moved to kind of a master kits with our regulators. We had every model of our regulators would have a repair kit that came specific to it. So recently we moved to a master kit by line size to kind of consolidate inventory, make it simpler for customers. Since we moved to that, I had a customer ask the question, how do they know like what their existing inventory of kits, how it lines up with the new master kits? And luckily for me, the answer was really simple. You can just reference either your serial number or your model number on the website. And on the product page, you have both the master kit and the previous old kit that was specific to that model, both there. So that's one easy way to line up your old inventory with the new master kit inventory. We also send out a product notice that has a nice chart that's really neat that references both and correlates them. So you can reach out to somebody in product applications or through your account manager, and we could pitch you that PDF as a reference tool.
Also on the website.
Yeah.
Very cool. Will, did you have one around the kits?
I did. It wasn't the master kit, but a common question that I get is, what repair kit do I need for my valve? So, and I believe you answered that.
Yeah.
It should be just right there on the product page. Mm-hmm. And to kind of add a bonus to that, if you're not sure what you have, you can reference the serial number, go down to the bottom of our website, type in the serial number search. That'll give you a link to that specific product page, and scroll down and it'll be right there.
I think that's an important thing to reiterate and repeat, is that there's a lot of things that, especially if you've been working with Kimray for a little while, that you need to reference on the website or want to reference that is not always apparent when you go to the homepage. And so there's several links at the bottom in the black section, including serial number search. I think repair kits is down there. There's a ton of stuff down at the bottom of the homepage. So
also might be a good time to note that our website works really good on phones.
Does it work on a flip phone?
Doubt it.
We do have an option for that too. If you still have a flip phone or you don't have cell service, just order a catalog. We'll send you one.
Yeah, we'll give you the old physical catalog.
We'll give you a catalog free of charge.
Your book. Very good. Okay. Jordan, your last one here has to do with the ValveCon electric actuator.
Another resale item.
So the question is, can I mount my ValveCon and R2L
horizontally?
Adapter horizontally.
Yeah, correct. Short answer is yes. What was going on with this customer is that we have a travel indicator that shows where you're at in stem travel in the yoke assembly for that R2L in between the ValveCon and the valve body. It was getting hung up as the valve would actuate. The issue was not the horizontal mounting, which was causing the travel indicator, gravity was pulling it down. The stem was running into the travel indicator. They just needed to fasten the pins of the travel indicator on the yoke. Okay. And that would have held it up and it wouldn't have made contact with the stem assembly. But then the customer came to me with this issue, assuming that the issue was that they weren't allowed to mount them horizontally. So I thought this would be a good one to bring up. So I could say, you could mount, as long as everything's bolted up right, you can mount that thing upside down and it would actuate just fine.
No, I thought there was an issue with like an oil bowl.
So this is an electric actuator. This is like the ValveCon.
Yeah, yeah. But to lubricate the stem.
Yeah, so that would be the case in the old and pneumatic top works. Okay. But that's eliminated when we go to the electric actuator. So not an issue at all.
So it doesn't have to be lubricated.
Mm-mm. Yeah, they put a bunch of industrial grease on it when they assemble those bottom works.
Nice. A bunch of it.
Yeah, wow. A ton.
And just to clarify, when we say horizontal, the pipe would be vertical, but the actuator would be
jutting out horizontally.
Jutting out. Okay.
So what applications are you seeing that they're mounting them, that they're needing or wanting to mount them horizontally?
Oh, I actually don't know. Yeah, I didn't get that bit of information.
Would it be just because the existing piping is like that?
Yeah, it could be the existing piping, or they're doing some sort of dump. I would imagine in a dump situation, you would need it vertical.
Gotcha.
if they're not using an angled body and the piping's going off of a dump and it needs to go down, then I guess they would use the valve cons that way.
Okay.
Also, just to note, it was a 1-inch valve con, so the footprint wasn't enormous. Because that was the other thought that I had was, why are they mounting this thing horizontally? It's going to jut out like 2.5 feet. But
there's other ones on the market that do, that have an actuator and a rotary to linear adapter, and that are longer than Kimray's R2L, and they stick out pretty far.
No joke.
Yeah, my gosh. What's your thought behind the valve con being mounted? Like, what application?
So, just the reasons. If it's piping constraints, or if your piping is running vertically, which is usually where I've seen it, that's the reason for it.
But what I know about this specific situation is that they were indoors, and this was a retrofit situation. So that I think that where they were at, it was they pulled the top works off, put the R2L and the valve cone on, and it would just happen to be horizontal.
The only caveat that I would add to that is, because I 100% agree that it'll totally work just fine. The only thing that you might be aware of is that you could potentially get premature wear and tear on the stem, just because of gravity is now working against your.
Fair point.
It can wear prematurely on that on that underside. Now, it should be a while, and it's also going to depend on your rate of actuation, how often it's actuating and things like that. But you may have to change that packing out a little more often than normal.
So that should be on your preventive maintenance.
Correct. Yep.
Radar.
Yep.
We've been talking a lot about preventive maintenance in my circles lately. trying to make some content that helps producers at least know the potential for wear and tear, and that you should, just encouraging scheduled maintenance. Do you talk with customers about that very often?
Sure. Yeah, it comes up. It's usually after the fact. They usually have something that's leaking, and they're wanting to know. They're wanting to know why. They're wanting to know what repair kit they need, and so on. Okay. And most of the time, it's just normal wear and tear. The valve's been in service for a long time.
It's going
to
happen.
It's been exposed to heat and cold and all different types of chemicals coming out of the ground, and the elastomers get brittle over time, and they usually wear out. Now, in more rare cases, it's because they're actually dealing with a chemical that the elastomers aren't compatible with. So that's something to check into. It's one of my first questions. If they do have a failure like that, I'll ask, how long has it been in service? If it's been in service for a year or more, then it's probably fine.
It definitely changes the angle you need to take when you're dealing with the issue.
It just needs a standard repair kit, most likely.
Yeah.
But if it's been a few weeks or maybe a couple of months, I'd ask them what they have, what their process fluid is, and what type of elastomers they have. So
In most of our content, we say at minimum a year, especially if you're dealing with like a legacy kind of operation. But up to, as little as 2 weeks if you're, still in a high flow early phase of the well. Is that kind of what you understand people do? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. You're right. It depends on what stage the well is in. Because if you're in flowback, you're probably going to wash out trims and seats and things like that. Your elastomers will probably be fine. But, if you're using stem-guided high-pressure control valves for liquid dump applications in flowback, especially on the water side, you're going to have a lot of sand. And even with our higher end trim sets, you're still potentially going to have washouts because of just the vast amount of sand that's in them. So
do they, in flowback though, like you don't want to shut the well.
Right.
So are they, do they just wait until problems happen, or do they have like scheduled shutdowns? Or do you know? I mean, it differs well, I guess.
It differs operator to operator from what I've seen. They'll either have it on a rotation, or when it leaks, they'll change it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of personal preference.
Yeah. I guess you could have redundancy there, too, if you want to bypass a valve to work on it.
Right. Yep. Some guys do that, too. They'll have two valves set up in parallel that they can.
It's funny this keeps coming up because we're starting to do some information gathering on international production, and it seems like it's obviously that's different country to country too, but it seems from what I'm learning, like there seems to be some more standard well-to-well, some standard setups as compared to U.S. domestic production just because it's a lot of it's state run. Mm-hmm. And so whereas here it could be a small operation, big operation, they're medium, right. You know, and they're all going to do things differently, even within the same
for sure
area.
Same company.
Yeah.
Same area. Yeah. Could be different.
Anyway. All right. What else you got, Will?
All right, Jordan, here we go. What supply pressure do I need for an outside supply regulator?
60% of the set point.
There you go.
Ooh, ding, ding,
60 to 100% of your set point.
Yep.
That came up with a podcast a few episodes ago with Jeff and Tommy Bruce. Tommy was saying that's a really hard thing to explain.
The way that I explain it is regarding the relationship of the motor valve diaphragm surface area and your seat surface area. So the motor valve diaphragm surface area, it's a lot of words, is approximately 2 times the size of your seat surface area. So you technically only need about 50% of your set point to overcome your upstream pressure that's being communicated on the bottom of the seat in order to close the valve. Mm-hmm. But we add that 10% safety factor.
As a buffer.
Mm-hmm. So if you think your upstream pressure is going to fluctuate quite a bit, then you can turn that pressure up to 100% of what your set point is, and that way you have more of a safety buffer. So
that's a good one. I haven't thought about that in a long time.
Yeah. Well, I had a customer ask me that a week ago or so, and then I had a training class on it with that same group of guys, and that came up, and we talked about it. So
cool.
They're doing a lot of conversions.
Yeah, a lot of
from,
people are right now.
Standard regulators to non-vent and outside supply. Mm-hmm. So
you hearing more questions about that as well?
Oh yeah, it's weekly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, weekly, people are calling and asking questions about it.
Yeah, the outside supply we've only had out for 6 months.
So
like that?
We actually have had that for a long time. It was just called the liquid back pressure valve.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Which rebranding was wise, and we're always. Yeah. I mean, the last few months we're like suggesting that thing left and right.
Good
for sure.
Good, good, good. What else you got, Will? Anything else?
Well, do I save my
zinger?
Oh,
that wasn't it.
That wasn't it.
That was the zinger. I was like, I did well. Okay,
you did. You did great.
It was a softball.
That was a semi.
That was a semi
zinger. Yeah.
I had to think for a second on that one.
All right, Jordan, you ready?
Sure.
So, what is choked flow? If a customer calls and says, hey, I'm sizing a valve, I'm putting in my parameters, and it keeps giving me this warning at the bottom of the sizing calculator that says warning, choked flow.
So the way I explain this to people is when you've reached choked flow, you can no longer increase your volume through the valve or the regulator by increasing pressure differential. You can always raise your upstream pressure and shove more gas or liquid, or actually just gas, through the regulator. But once you've reached choke flow, you can't increase your volume by increasing your pressure differential.
Okay.
Acceptable.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's good.
That actually works with water and gas. You can increase your upstream pressure, shove more through, essentially, is what's happening. But once you've reached that choke flow, you can't decrease your downstream pressure and move any more through.
You've essentially made the valve a point of restriction.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
How would you answer it, Will? Or how did you answer it?
Pretty close to that.
Yeah.
You know?
I went way more technical. Making the valve a restriction is a better way of explaining that, I think.
Well, they both go together. Yeah. I've had people ask me that a few times before, and usually what I'll tell them, as long as your valve is sized properly, with gas, you should be fine. Now, with liquid, it gets kind of tricky because you can get into cavitation and you can damage the valve body. But with gas, since it's a compressible fluid, you're good to go, usually, if your valve is sized properly.
Will you say that one more time? With choked flow, you're not good to go with choked flow. You are good to go if it's gas.
Yes. So if, let's say...
It's not a problem.
It's not a problem, correct. Unless you are needing to get additional flow rate capacity out of that valve, then you're going to have to change something with your pressures. You're either going to have to lower your pressure differential in some way in order to get more volume through the valve.
I go the liquid route whenever I hear choked flow. I think about cavitation.
Right.
Oversize usually is the problem there, right?
Undersize. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you're putting too much through there is when you can get cavitation.
And you'll never get more liquid through there.
Oh, you will. You'll just, your valve will suffer. Mm. Yeah, as cavitation happens, it'll wear out the inside of that valve body and kind of tear it up.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you can get more through there for a time.
You can.
All right. No beef, you guys are okay?
You'll shake hands?
I'll have a little beef if he keeps bringing these zingers.
As far as I know.
I'm scaring the daylights out of me. I'm glad I knew your answers.
All right. Enjoyed it, fellas. We'll have links to the blogs, videos, and other resources that we mentioned in this episode in the show notes. And we will catch you next time on Stuff You Should Know About Oil and Gas Production.